WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked and loaded into Current Sports on this Monday, November 2nd, 2015. I am your host, Al Martin. I trust that you all had a great Hollow weekend. Hopefully you guys were safe. It was a bit rainy on Halloween, but hey, it's always a fun time nonetheless. We've got a great show as we try to recap the weekend that was in the sporting world. A ton to talk about, including the Detroit Lions embarrassing themselves internationally out in London. Was that bad or what? Also, we'll recap the World Series from last night. The Kansas City Royals have won the World Series the first time in 30 years. How crazy is that, right? Also, the JT Barrett suspension. There was a press conference that was held by Ohio State this morning. We will also be inviting Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the team. 92.1 FM. Doc will give us a recap on the high school football action that took place. Postseason action that took place, I should say, on Friday. Doc was broadcasting the Portland and Stockbridge game. He'll give us his thoughts on that game as well as all of the local area action that took place that night. And then we'll have weekend winners for you as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Our phone lines are now open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Monday, November 2nd. All right, and we start with the World Series. The Kansas City Royals outlasted the New York Mets in Game 5 of the World Series, 7-2 in 12 innings for their first World Series dub since 1985. How cool is that, right? Christian Colon, how good was he? He singled home the tie-breaking run in the 12th. Salvador Perez was crowned World Series MVP for the Royals. Matt Harvey pitched 8 strong innings for the Mets, giving up 2 runs on 5 hits, striking out 9, but in the end, it just was not enough. The Royals come back once again. Actually, I believe the 8th time the Royals have come back to win in this year's postseason. Incredible action, folks.
Cespedes now with the bases loaded, nobody out. Strike 2, and that hurt. See if this caught him.
Right, Nick, on the knee.
Left knee.
Oh, mercy. Yeah, no pad or anything in that. Painful.
Royals have fought back the entire postseason. A chance here in the 9th inning. The 0-1. That's in the air to left. Second Hosmer. And that's it for Matt Harvey. The 1-2 again. Inside corner. The Royals, 2015 World Champions.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff, folks. Congrats to the Kansas City Royals. We'll have more on that game in just a sec. The Detroit Lions. Yeah, we got to go there. They fell to the Kansas City Chiefs in London yesterday, 45-10 the final after scoring a field goal on the opening drive of the game. The Lions' offense went silent. Yeah, very quiet, as Alex Smith threw for 2 touchdowns for KC. Calvin Johnson led the Lions with 85 receiving yards, but left the game early with an apparent ankle injury. The Lions are on a bye, thank goodness, this week. The New England Patriots cruised to a big win Thursday night, 36-7, as Tom Brady threw 4 TDs. The Cincinnati Bengals escaped a late push from the Pittsburgh Steelers, but star running back and former MSU standout Le'Veon Bell is lost for the year with an MCL tear. Ugh. The Denver Broncos, they handed the Green Bay Packers their first loss of the season as Aaron Rodgers was held to just 77 passing yards last night. And tonight, Monday Night Football, Cam Newton looks to keep the Carolina Panthers rolling as they host Andrew Luck in the Indianapolis Colts. Former MSU star running back Eric Allen sadly passed away this weekend. He was 66 years old. He led the Big Ten in rushing in 1971. That year, he also ran for 350 yards against Purdue, a record that still stands today. He finished 10th in Heisman voting in 1971 and was drafted by the Baltimore Colts in 1972 before playing 4 years in the Canadian Football League. He closed out his career as MSU's all-time leader in rushing attempts, rushing yards, rushing TDs, and all-purpose yards. Today, Allen still ranks among the school's all-time top 20 in all-purpose yards, total TDs, rushing yards, rushing attempts, and scoring.
Sizen's fake is a good one. His pass is not. It's picked off by Eric Allen. Allen still spinning, still finding room, and Allen comes out of the pack. Eric Allen still on his feet. Eric Allen at the 40. Steps into the end zone, and the Eagles are ahead from 94 yards away.
The Michigan State women's volleyball team traveled to Northwestern and lost the match in four sets. MSU falls to 14-9 overall and 6-6 in the Big Ten. MSU is now 36-34 all time against Northwestern as the Wildcats earn their first win in the last six meetings. MSU had also won five straight at Welch Ryan Arena prior to. MSU was outblocked for the fourth straight match and surrendered 14 blocks to the Wildcats. Michigan's defense stands strong on the one-yard line as they take back the brown jug and beat Minnesota on a last-second goal line stand, 29-26, your final of that, when Michigan quarterback Jake Rudock left the game in the third quarter with concussion-like symptoms. Backup QB Wilton Spate came in and led them to a dub.
We're going to be down to 30 seconds by the time the Gophers take this snap. Leidner. We're going to be down to 30 seconds by the time the Gophers take this snap. Leidner, pump fakes, wants it all, goes to the corner.
All right, and last but not least, Matt Kenseth's team and Joey Logano's team reportedly got in a scuffle after Matt Kenseth appeared to deliberately wreck Logano's car. NASCAR is reviewing the incident as we await further notice on possible fines or suspensions. Yeah, they're beefing, folks. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those or anything on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com. Like us there and leave us a comment. And I'll read that comment live here on our airwaves, or even tweet us at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR underscore sports. Without further ado, it's time to start the show.
You got an organization that decides to fire three or four people, their coaches. They don't play the game. I'm sorry, they prepare the players to play the game, but the players must play the game. This is the worst executing football team I've seen on both sides of the ball in a long time, and that's why they are what they are.
It was really disgraceful to watch Detroit play. They have too many good players to be 1-7 at the midway point in the season. The lack of overall enthusiasm, it seems like when the players got the news that the coaches, that they just quit this week, like they stayed on. Remember we had that game, coach, where the first bus brought the players and the second bus took them away from the stadium.
It was the New England-Arizona game.
Yeah, it was a lot like that in London.
You know what? I'm really a loss for words to start today's show because I feel like we have exhausted every single adjective in the dictionary that we possibly use to describe how bad the Detroit Lions are, folks. Now, if you're like me, who has really just kind of, you know, booked in this year, and I think everyone's really content that the Lions aren't making the playoffs here. They have no postseason aspirations. If you're like me, you didn't even bother setting an alarm to wake up to watch these bums play out in London. I just didn't. I'm sitting there like, you know what? Do I really want to waste my time? Do I want to waste my morning where I can get a few more hours of sleep in and catch the other NFL slate games later on that afternoon? Do I really want to put myself through 2 hours of torture to watch the Honolulu Blue muck it up out in London? So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Slept till about 11:30, 12-ish, woke up, walked to my television as the fourth quarter was just about done with and looked at the score and said, yeah, I'm not surprised, folks. Not surprised at all. This team, I'm just a loss for words because we've harped on throughout this entire year what the Lions should do, how are they so bad, what's going on to, what should happen for this team to improve. But folks, we've exhausted it at this point. And it's so disheartening sitting there watching this team. And again, I mean, what you just heard was actually commentators from the NFL Countdown crew. And they call the Detroit Lions a disgrace. A disgrace. And I think that's an accurate word to describe this team because there is no way whatsoever that when evaluating the talent that this team has on paper, there's no way that the Detroit Lions should be 1-7. So, granted, anytime you have a record like that, you got to point the finger. Whose fault is it? Who takes the blame for this franchise being this downtrodden? The easy finger would be pointed at, you know, for a cop-out, would be, of course, the head coach, Jim Caldwell. There have been many fingers pointed at Caldwell this year. Next in line would probably be, what, Matthew Stafford in the offense? Next in line, maybe. And again, these are the cop-out, you know, fingers that are being pointed right now. These are fingers that I've seen, you know, from social media, on Twitter, from my family members and friends while trying to figure out what's going wrong here. And again, I've seen Caldwell numero uno. Then I've seen a lot of people blaming Matthew Stafford. And I've seen a lot of people talk about that offensive line, where, in my opinion, it goes much higher than that. I've said this multiple times, folks. It starts with the upper management. Guys like Martin Mayhew, the Ford family. I mean, we can go all the way back. I mean, this has been a collection of just mess-ups by this organization for quite some time. But then, you know, I'm conflicted with my emotions because when looking at last year, folks, the Detroit Lions were a playoff team last year. The Detroit Lions were one bad call away from advancing in the playoffs last year against the Dallas Cowboys, if you remember. So I just don't understand how in one season, in one off season, this team goes from a playoff team to just utter disaster. I don't know. If I knew the answer to that question, like I always say, I wouldn't be behind this mic. I'd be making a lot more money as an executive somewhere, I believe, folks. It just blows my mind right now. And I don't know if we should instantly put Jim Caldwell on the chopping block because, in my opinion, I'm conflicted with that emotion as well because when Jim Caldwell was announced as the head coach for the Detroit Lions and looking at what he was able to do for this team last season, I'm sitting there saying Jim Caldwell's the guy. He knows what he's doing. It's only going to go up from here. But then you have a year like this, and it's hard for a lot of fans out there not to put them on the hot seat. It is really hard. 1-7? Fire the whole team, if you ask me. But the reason why I'm conflicted is because I still believe that Jim Caldwell deserves at least one more year to see if he can get this thing right. Because I don't believe that the entire weight of the world rest on his shoulders when evaluating the demise of the Detroit Lions. It's shared responsibility, folks. And I really like, you know, how Mike Ditka put it just then. Again, at the end of the day, you want a coach that has a firm grip on the steering wheel, that knows where he wants this franchise to head and knows how to get there, knows how to outline the steps to getting there. But at the same time, don't the players have to go out there and play? Don't the players have to go out there and perform? How much responsibility do you place on their shoulders for not showing up each and every Sunday? It's an interesting conversation, a very interesting one. And then you look at the talent from a talent perspective, folks. You have the best wide receiver in the game of football, yet you can't get the football to him. And, you know, so that line is initially drawn to Matthew Stafford. But then that line is drawn from Matthew Stafford to the offensive line because Matthew Stafford barely has any time to throw the football. No time whatsoever, folks. So it's hard for me to really harp on him, even though I think Matthew Stafford makes some questionable decisions. Again, he's thrown 11 interceptions. He's been sacked 22 times throughout this season. So that line is directly drawn again to the offensive line. They can't protect the man. So how is the offensive line? Why is the offensive line this bad? So then you draw that line to the way that the Lions have completely ignored the offensive line for constant years on end, folks, with stupid drafts like Eric Ebron and Kyle Van Noy, which totally, I don't get it. The draft is there for you to address your needs, not to make your team sexier, folks, offensively. You address your needs in the draft. I've constantly said that with the Lions, and year after year, they add more weapons to the offense for Matthew Stafford to play with. But how can he play with those toys if he doesn't have the time to play with those toys? So I don't know. I'm ranting at this point, folks, just because I just don't know what to say more about this team. I just don't know. I'm confused. I'm sure many of you Lions fans are confused and have been for quite some time. And, again, I couldn't even watch him because I just knew what to expect. They're going against the Chiefs. And to travel across the Atlantic Ocean and to put up a performance like that on the London stage, and I really think the NFL has done a great job in promoting their brand internationally with this series, having teams from the NFL go out and play in London. But you got to put a good product out there as well. Sunday's game between the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs was the second biggest blowout in the international series history. The second biggest blowout. So if you're trying to promote your brand, the NFL, out in London, and you have an effort that the Detroit Lions have against the Chiefs where they just completely roll over the D, how in the world does that enhance your brand? It just makes your brand look bad, doesn't it? I didn't get a chance to check out how many butts were in the seats at that game, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a lot in that second half, folks. Oh, gosh, it's frustrating watching the Detroit Lions. What do you think about them? If you want to sound off, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The Detroit Lions, thank goodness, as I stated in our headliners, they have a bye. We won't see this team this weekend, thank goodness, because it's just a waste of everyone's time at this point. It really is. Where do they go from here now? I mean, the season is in the dumps. Do you fire Caldwell? Do you keep him on for another year? I say you keep him and just to see what happens. Give him one more year because it's hard to ignore what he did last season. But at the end of the day, this team just isn't getting it done. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer, hailing all the way from New Orleans, my man, 50 grand, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing? How was your Halloween weekend, dude?
Good weekend, Al. Yeah, a little bit better yesterday for me than most Lions fans. But, gosh, embarrassing, disgraceful, whatever adjective you want to use. Like you said, we've exhausted them all because this team is good. This team has some talent. I know the defense is banged up. I know they're missing key players. But even so, this is a team that should have gone to the divisional round last year, didn't make that many changes aside from losing one big player, but they had a good draft pick who's played quite well. the fault for the sacks is not on Lakin Tomlinson. It's the guards, or the tackles, rather, who have been absolutely horrible, just getting blown by time after time by outside rushers. And you saw it yesterday. Matthew Stafford, you mentioned 22 sacks on the season, I think. Mm-hmm. Six sacks yesterday. Six. And you look at the game stats. Boy, I'll tell you, if you weren't watching it, you wouldn't really, you'd think this was maybe a 7-point game, because Kansas City didn't dominate this in yardage. Yeah, they were good. They didn't dominate this in first downs. They were better in both. But the thing is, they just forced turnovers at important times, capitalized on them, and did everything that the Lions couldn't. And mm-hmm. that's all it comes down to, pretty much. This is just a team that can't get it together, can't put two and two together, get the simple parts of the game right. And that's why they fail, because it's not a lack of talent. This offense, in my opinion, is better than it ever has been. Theo Riddick has developed. Amir Abdullah, we saw flashes of his potential and, you know, how much he can bring to this team the first game of the season. Obviously, since then, he's severely dropped off. But Joik Bell yesterday looked great. Seven rushes, 56 yards. He's finally back. Meanwhile, the receiving core, deeper than it's ever been. That should open up windows to pass it to Calvin Johnson outside of double teams and Golden Tate. Yet, guess what? They still can't get them the ball enough.
No.
It's ridiculous. It's just a lack of execution. I'm not sure how much you can blame on Jim Caldwell, but some changes need to be made.
Yeah, they certainly do. It's. Did you watch the game?
I watched the game.
I didn't even watch it, man. I'm like, you know what? Sleep is more important than the Lions right now.
Well, you made a smart call, my friend.
Yeah, I didn't even bother, man. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. An exciting weekend overall. So many things going down. I did tune into the Michigan game. That was an interesting one. I did also tune into the Miami and Duke ending. That had an interesting ending to it, because Miami ended up topping Duke in one of the craziest plays you ever see in your life. And actually, current state's own Mark Bayshore, he texted me when this play went down. I happened to be tuning into something else when it happened. And he's like, Al, did you check out the ending of the Miami-Duke game? And I said, no. So I flip over, and lo and behold, on ESPN, they're playing the highlight of it. And, again, it was one of the craziest plays I've ever seen in my life. I mean, so many, it was a bunch of laterals, because that's you know, how a lot of teams do. When they're out of it, you know, if they're down by a touchdown or wherever it may be, I mean, and they have a last-second chance to win the game on the kickoff. Again, you just throw a lot of laterals to see if maybe something opens up, and that's exactly what happened. Miami goes all the way down the field. They return the ball for a touchdown. And there was a lot of controversy surrounded around it, because the refs apparently missed a ton of calls when looking at that final play. A ton of calls. And we'll get to the specifics of those calls. I'm going to save it for my weekend winner's rant. And so much so that the officiating crew who worked that game and who had a 9-minute deliberation on that final call, they have been suspended for their lack of prowess. Lack of officiating prowess is what I'm calling it. So we'll dive into that. Interesting stuff in that game. Also, Michigan, man, it got dicey at the end of that game, folks. It got really, really dicey at the end of that game. But Jim Harbaugh and company, they shake off the heartbreaking loss to Michigan State after the bye week to get a dub over Minnesota. Minnesota team that was certainly driven by a ton of emotion when evaluating how Jerry Kill, now former head coach of the Golden Gophers, decided to take a leave of absence, or retire, I should say, because of his health concerns. And also, as we know, when we woke up on Saturday, I got this news that JT Barrett is now suspended. And again, Urban Meyer and the Ohio State Buckeyes, they just actually had a press conference this morning addressing the situation. But in addition to a one-game suspension, Ohio State quarterback JT Barrett will also lose his scholarship for a term as part of his discipline for a DUI arrest. Yes, a DUI arrest during the bye week for OSU over the weekend. Check out this.
It counts as, I believe, as a positive, and that would be his first. So there's no punishment. Counseling, he has to do counseling and some other things through the university. He forfeited a scholarship for a term. And so when a kid has an issue like that, there's some type of punitive damage as far as missing a game or something, and then they forfeit their scholarship at some point. They can earn it back.
Yeah, of course, that's head coach Urban Meyer of the Ohio State Buckeyes addressing the situation. He also went on to say, quote, "I love JT, but JT is going to deal with something he's never had to deal with before. Now there is some question about who you are. 20 years of doing something right, 30 seconds of doing wrong." Yeah, that's how it is, man. That is how it is. You know, we've seen multiple times, Isaac, how, you know, and we've had this discussion multiple times about athletes, specifically athletes who are in college and who have a sort of, you know, fame with their name, you know, for lack of better terms. I mean, when you play for a Division I college like Ohio State and you have the success like a JT Barrett has had at the quarterback position, and when you are the national champs, for goodness sake, there's a certain, a certain amount of attention that you get. You are a celebrity in a way. And you have to carry yourself with that in the back of your head at all times. Because as an athlete at a Division I college, you have to have your head on a swivel, because one wrong thing could you can land up in hot water. And this is an interesting situation, because anytime you're talking about a DUI, that's serious stuff. Because when you are intoxicated, and it's one thing if you are intoxicated and you're just harming yourself. But when you get behind the wheel of a car and you're intoxicated, there are other lives at stake when you turn that key. Because how many times have we seen drunk drivers on the road involved in an accident in which other people lose their lives based on that individual's stupid decision? You put other lives at risk. So it was interesting. I was interested to see what type of punishment Urban Meyer would hand down and what type of punishment the university or the NCAA would hand down on JT Barrett due to this, because this is pretty serious stuff. And one game for me, just handing down a one-game suspension for me just isn't enough, because this is so serious. I'm curious, and I can't help but think this. I'm curious to know if this was, you know, the third string running back or the third string lineman or the kicker. I'm curious to know, and this always crosses my mind, I'm curious to know whether or not that individual would get a harsher punishment as opposed to the guy who's behind center and the quote-unquote star of the team. That thought crosses my mind all the time. One game is not enough for me. And I, you know, you heard Urban talking about a counseling session, which I do think is warranted in this situation. The scholarship, I think that, you know, when look, because he, at the end of the day, he wants to keep JT on the field. This is the defending national champion Buckeyes. At the end of the day, it's about winning, period. I mean, this is how college sports is, especially when you're the Ohio State football team. But at the end of the day, you got to send the right message to the team and to the NCAA. I don't know if this is enough.
Yeah, this is a nice little timeout. Sit out 5 minutes while the other kids play in the sandbox and then get back in there and go have some fun.
Right.
That's what
right.
This is. This is no different. This is ridiculous. Urban Meyer's got a history of not punishing players enough when he was at Florida. He brings the same thing to Ohio State. Yeah, lose your scholarship for a semester, that's fine. Okay, I think that's good, actually. I think that's what should happen. But at the same time, you are hurting the player and the person with that. You're punishing his financial situation. You're not punishing your product. You're not punishing your play on the field. You're not taking any sort of responsibility with something like that. No, this is ridiculous. Come on. He's going to miss the Minnesota game at that. You've got two perfectly adequate backups yeah. who would start on any other team in America. No, suspend the guy for... Oh, wow, this is a serious issue. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And again, you know, you got Michigan State, you got Michigan coming up as well. All right, let's hit our first break. Really, we got time for a really quick call before we invite our guest, Eric Doc Love, to the show. I want to get really quickly to Mike from Saginaw. Can we get Mike in real quick, Isaac? Is he still there? Mike, are you here?
Yeah, I'm still here, man.
What's up, Mike? How you doing? Welcome to the show.
How you doing, man? What I was going to comment about, since y'all talking about the Lions, what about the Pontiac Silverdome, man? If you had a bunch of money, would you tear it down and build a soccer-specific stadium and get an MLS team here?
You know, that's interesting. From a financial perspective, I think soccer is certainly growing here in America. The Pontiac Silverdome, I believe they're already in the process of tearing it down. I don't know if they have any plans for that respective space. But as far as bringing an MLS team to Michigan, I don't see how that can hurt, you know, the economy. I think that will help, to be honest. Isaac, you're a big soccer head. What do you think of that move?
Hey, Michael, it's actually Detroit City FC is the local soccer club in Detroit. It's
right.
NPSL. It's fourth division. And they're actually looking into, in the Hamtramck section of Detroit, building a new stadium there, expanding on a former high school one. So that team itself is growing. But MLS is still a ways in the distance for Detroit. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Because I remember, I don't know if you remember, they did have a soccer team called the Detroit Express.
Did they?
And they had this one English player. His name was Trevor Francis. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he was a great player to play for them, man. And I just thought about it. I said, if they can hold a World Cup here and get all kinds of crowds, and down at the Michigan Stadium, they had capacity when the British club teams like Manchester United and all of them came to Michigan. It's got to be a market here for soccer.
I think it's a growing sport. We actually had Nate Miller, who is the new head coach and GM of Lansing United, Lansing's very own minor league soccer team. And Nate, he really talked about how soccer seems to be growing steadily here in America. I just don't know, Isaac, when looking at the timetable of popularity here in America when it comes to soccer, I think it's going to take a long time, though, still for soccer to become really imminent in our, you know, just regular sporting world here in America.
Yeah, and in a lot of cities especially that are, you know, don't have as much of, I mean, you know, in more suburban areas is where we really see the true growth of soccer in America. In the heart of Detroit or where I'm from in New Orleans, you don't see that same culture of soccer. So I think that's a ways in the future. I think it's coming up. You see a lot of hipsters really embrace the sport. I think it's great because I love soccer. But I still think we're
in the race. Before I let you get to your guest, you know Carlissa Shields is going to be in the Olympics again.
Who is that?
Carlissa Shields from Flint.
Oh, yes. She won the gold medal not too long ago. We're actually in the works of getting Clarissa here on the show, so you don't want to miss that in the coming weeks.
I'll let you go on with your guest, man. Thank you.
Mike, always a great call. Appreciate it, dude. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite the man, the myth, the legend, Doc. That's right, Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the team, 92.1 FM. You don't want to miss that and so much more right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes this Wednesday, not at 6, at 3:30 p.m. That's right, we're moving up our production time because I will actually be out at the Breslin Center, Isaac. I'll be PA announcing for the Michigan State men's basketball game against Northern Michigan. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, wish I could come, Al. I've got a class from 6 to 8:50 on Wednesdays. It's
how inconvenient.
Brutal.
Oh, man.
Brutal.
Well, you're going to miss out, dude. First, it's an exhibition game. So, of course, you'll be with me throughout the year covering the entire MSU men's basketball year. And by the way, of course, tomorrow, Mark D'Antonio will address the media at Spartan Stadium as the Spartan football team comes off a bye week. They will play Nebraska on the road, a night game Saturday night. And I don't know if after Coach D speaks, Tom Izzo will be speaking as well at Spartan Stadium to give a preview on the Northern Michigan game. So a busy, busy week here on Current Sports. But I'll be chatting with Coach Lee Vickers, you football coach who used to be an assistant coach under the tutelage of course, Jim Ahern at Lansing Catholic with the Lansing Catholic football team. So I am looking forward to chatting with Lee as he will talk about his time as a coach and also give his thoughts and opinions on Mid-Michigan High School football playoffs. And speaking of that very topic, we have the man on the line right now. His name is Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator on the team, 92.1 FM. Doc, how you doing?
What's up, Al? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Always a pleasure having you on. We got you. How you doing, Doc?
Good. I'm doing great, man.
Now, I believe you and Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, you guys were at the Stockbridge and Portland game on Friday. Again, high school football is now embarked on the postseason, and Portland looks really, really good. Of course, Portland gets out of that matchup, and they move on a 57-18 win over Stockbridge. And I got to ask you, Doc, I mean, you know, because I was following you via Twitter as that game took place. And what was so impressive to me was how the Portland defense was able to slow down Mason G. Montgomery. I believe they had 10 sacks, forced four turnovers. What did you see from that game? How in the world was the Portland defense able to have a big night like that?
Well, you know, going into that matchup, that was one of our keys to the game was how could the Stockbridge offense and defensive line, how could they handle the physicality from Portland? The Raiders, they're big. And they kind of pushed people around. You know, they went 9-0 during the regular season. And we wondered, you know, Mason G. Montgomery set the state record for most touchdown passes in the season. He had 49 going into that playoff game. And he's got, you know, two guys with over 1,000 yards receiving, Colby Canfield, Austin Samala. Would they be able to, you know, just kind of handle that defense from Portland? Would they be able to use their speed against them? And Mason G. Montgomery was running for his life the entire time, Al. The offensive line just could not handle the front seven from the Raiders. And like the other matchup we were in, could they handle those speed guys? Because Mason G. Montgomery and Stockbridge, they've got such talented, quick wide receivers. And the physicality and the speed from Portland, it really showed. And every time Stockbridge tried to get back into the ballgame, the Raiders had a response every single time.
Really impressive stuff from Portland. They have been impressive, of course, all season. And I believe, so Mason G. Montgomery, so he had 49 entering that contest on Friday night, Doc. I believe he had two touchdown passes that night, so that makes it, what, 51 for the year?
Yeah, 51 now is the state record for touchdown passes. He had two. He had three interceptions in the ballgame. And this is a kid who ran for over 1,000 yards on the season. Portland held him to negative 20 rushing.
Oh, my goodness. That's absolutely unbelievable. That's like an average of like five touchdown passes every single week. Oh, that's crazy. Now, what do you think makes that Portland defense so darn good, Doc?
I mean, the front seven is just tremendous. You're talking about guys on the defensive line that, you know, you get a 5'7 guy in Mark Brooks. We saw him earlier in the season, Al. He dropped back in coverage to pick off a pass.
Right.
In week one.
Right.
I mean, you got their nose tackle is very unconventional. You think a nose tackle in a 5-2 style defense is kind of a big guy. You're thinking, you know, Ndamukong Suh or Haloti Ngata, a big guy. They got Hayden Moss, a junior. He's 5'8", 160 pounds at nose tackle. That is a little guy.
Right.
But he was in the backfield consistently. He got two sacks in that ball game. He was always in the backfield putting pressure on Mason G. Montgomery. And then you bring in the linebackers, Jalen Simpson, Kyler Simon, and they're bigger dudes. They're about 6 foot, 210, 230, something like that. But they got the speed, Al. They're so fast out there that if they would throw a bubble screen out to a wide receiver, Stockbridge, those linebackers could get out there and make a tackle on them.
Unbelievable stuff. I tell you, they are such an impressive team. Coach Navarro certainly has done a brilliant job with them all year. And now I can't wait for this weekend, Doc, because we are going to see a rematch between Lansing Catholic and, of course, Portland. The game is going to be at Portland. Portland 10-0, Lansing Catholic 9-1. The only blemish they had on their record was, of course, they lost to Portland earlier on in the year. How do you beat the Portland Red Raiders?
That's a good question, Al. It's going to be tough for Coach Jim Ahern and Lansing Catholic this week. They got to make some adjustments. They lost 28-6 in that matchup earlier in the season, and Tony Poljan, the terrific senior quarterback for Lansing Catholic, he did not have a Poljan-like game. I believe he threw four interceptions in that one, and that Portland defense really flustered them. They couldn't get their run game going. I mean, it really starts off when you talk about the offensive and defensive lines against Portland. Can you handle the physical guys up front? Can you move them around? And not too many teams that have that success this season. It comes down to basics like that. Can you block them? Can you stop them from pressuring your quarterback?
Right. And you know what? Looking at Lansing Catholic also that night, Doc, of course, they beat Overdale, but, you know, the final score really doesn't tell the entire story. The final score was 42-13. But I do believe at halftime, the score is 14-13. Very close. Overdale, you know, they were able to go into the I formation. I was talking with one of our hosts here at WKAR, Brad Walker. And Brad, you know, he was at the game, at the Overdale game, and he told me that Overdale, they switched to an I formation and gave Lansing Catholic a bit of trouble in that second quarter. They were able to drive down the field and really get into a groove or a lather. How good is Lansing Catholic? And looking at Tony Poljan, I mean, again, you know, looking at that, because I was at that game when Portland first played LC earlier this year and were able to beat LC, and they put a lot of pressure on Tony Poljan. What do you think also makes Tony Poljan so dynamic, Doc?
Well, I mean, you get another guy, a big, tall guy out there, about 6'7", 6'8", whatever Tony may be. And, I mean, he has got that running ability, though. So, I mean, he's got the ability to escape. Now, most of the time, he's big enough and he's strong enough and he's fast enough. He can just kind of get away from guys, but it's going to be tougher against Portland because of that Raider defense. I mentioned those linebackers can really get out there, and they put a lot of pressure. I know Lansing Catholic had struggled early in the season, especially with being able to block for runners out there. And so they had to rely more on Tony Poljan to just kind of take over and be that singular force out there. You know, Tony Palmer's a great running back slash wide receiver for Lansing Catholic. So they got the two big guys right there. They're going to need somebody else to kind of step up and really help them out on offense this week against Portland. And then defensively, that Raiders run game, we've seen it, Al. They have to hand the ball off to two, three, four different guys, and they can all break it for long touchdowns. The Lansing Catholic defense has been pretty good. But you wonder, can Tony Poljan and Coach Ahern, can they get that stuff together? Can they game plan well enough and find a way to block that Portland defense?
It's certainly going to be a fun game. I can't wait for it again this Friday night, Lansing Catholic at Portland. What are you expecting in this week's game? And are you guys broadcasting that game, Doc?
We are, yep. Yeah, I filled out the MHSAA application earlier today.
Nice. What are you expecting in that game?
What am I expecting? You know, it's going to be I think it might be a bit.
Oh, I think Doc's cutting out. Doc, can you still hear me? You're cutting in and out a bit.
I can hear you.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Doc.
Are you still there?
Yeah, we're still here. Yep.
I expect a defensive battle, Al. Be a close one. It could be a low scoring. You know, this one could be a 20-18 game or something like that. But, I mean, Tony Poljan's got to have a big one. It's got to be Poljan and Palmer. Those are the guys offensively for Lansing Catholic. And for Portland, if they get that run game going, if they can push people around like they've been doing lately, I think Portland's got a chance to win. And they got either of these teams, really, whoever wins this matchup on Friday has got the opportunity to be in the state championship, honestly.
Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the team. 92.1 FM. Now, I'll be remiss if I didn't bring up this outstanding conference. I tell you, they are always competitive each and every season. I'm talking about the C-MAC. Dansville, Langsburg, PW, and Fowler, 4-0 from the C-MAC on Friday. Doc, what makes this conference so good?
Yeah, that was surprising to me. Not because they're terrible teams. They're actually really great teams, but to go 4-0, especially with Langsburg having to go on the road. The C-MAC is smaller schools. People kind of overlook some terrific talent out there. You know, from Plano, Westphalia, you're going to get an A game every week from junior running back Jared Smith, and he had another huge one Cuomo Osvilla was down at halftime in that game against Carson City Crystal on Friday. And Jared Smith, he just did what he did, 310 yards and six touchdowns on the ground. PW in Division 7, I mean, they're one of the favorites to win that one. Dansville, they played terrific this year. Their only loss was to PW. Everybody lost to PW this season. But they played really well this season. Fowler, they've struggled through some injuries, but they won on the road last week. So, I mean, the CMAC, that's a great conference, Al. There's a lot of good players out there.
Yes, it certainly is. And I'm looking forward to seeing how far this conference can take it. If they can, you know, if one of these teams can get to Ford Field, that is certainly going to be very interesting to watch. And, Doc, before I get you out of here, kind of short on time right now, but I was doing some browsing. I saw on your Twitter page that you guys actually put together an all-area team. Of course, you host the Pep Rally along with Jesse Goldberg Strassler each and every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on the Team 92.1 FM. And you guys have put together an impressive list for an all-area team for this year's football season. Can you kind of give us a rundown of who you had on that list?
Yeah, I mean, we took the usuals, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, stuff like that. We had Mason G. Montgomery on there. We had Tony Poljan as an honorable mention. Jared Smith was on that list. We had the two Stockbridge wide receivers. We had Dallas Watts, tight end for a Fowler. I had to put the fullback in there, Al. I love the fullback. You know that, man.
Got right.
Nate Jandernau from PW, Josh Martin from Grand Ledge. I mean, we took some players from Portland. We took DeWitt's great kicker, Matthew Maher. I mean, it wasn't really a depth chart for so much, and it was more guys that we had seen play this season, more so than, like, you know, we didn't get to see any Ithaca games. We put a couple of their players on there because, obviously, with the Yellow Jackets, they're always really good every single season. But it was a tough one, man. I had to go through a lot of different guys and try and figure out. I went back to the videotapes, went online, did some research just to make sure I had everything. We even came up with one that we called the athlete. It's those guys that they do so many different things for their team.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Palmer was on there for Lansing Catholic because he's a great returner. You know, he's a great runner. He can catch the ball. We had Bryce Dalen, a sophomore for Cuomo Osvilla, who plays offensive guard, linebacker, running back. I mean, these guys do everything. So we piled through it. I spent a long time on this list, and you know, obviously I had to leave some people off. Otherwise, the list would just keep going on and on and forever. But it was a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of good, talented guys in the area.
Folks, I tell you, Doc is the hardest working man in high school sports. Okay, if you want to check out that entire list, just simply head to the team, 921fm.com. Doc, always a pleasure, my friend. Great, great spot. Appreciate you taking the time out your day to come on.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Al.
Again, Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the team, 921 FM. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this Monday edition of CS by bringing you our weekend winners. Don't miss that and more right here on WKAR AM 870 Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Just to give you guys a quick rundown of the full action that took place in high school football on Friday night. Really briefly, going from division to division here, Grand Ledge ended up topping Howell in Division 1. In Division 3, DeWitt beat Hazlitt. St. John's topped Mason. Division 4, Ada Hills Eastern ended up knocking out Alma. Hudsonville Unity Christian ended up knocking out Lakewood. And Lake Fenton beat Corunna. Division 5, of course, as we mentioned with our chat with Eric Doc Love, Portland topped Stockbridge, Lansing Catholic topped Ovid Elsie, Berrien Springs, they beat Olivet. So again, Lansing Catholic will be on the road to play Portland this Friday night. Also in Division 6, how about Ithaca? Gosh, are they good or what? 56-14 beat down of Vassar. Langsburg beat Burton Bindle. And then Division 7. Cuomo Osvilla, they beat CCC, Carson City Crystal, and then Dansville topped Concord. Division 8, Fowler topped Merrill, and in 8-man football, Battle Creek St. Philip, they beat Portland St. Pat, and Morris topped New Haven Merritt Academy. And I believe you were at a game this Friday, right, Isaac?
Yeah, I was at St. John's Mason, and, boy, I'll tell you what, that St. John's team has improved so much over the course of the season. I saw them earlier in the year, and, yeah, they had a great rushing attack, but that defense still had a lot to work out. Now, gosh, Blake Thalen is really dominating that offense, and that defense was swarming throughout the game. They got so much pressure on Jarrett Van Havel, the quarterback for Mason, who's a fantastic player. You and I have seen him play multiple times.
Yep.
And he's so versatile. He can make something out of nothing. But boy, it's hard to make something out of 1 second in the pocket before you're getting swarmed by the defense. And that's what the whole game was. So next up for St. John's is, of course, DeWitt. And boy, that'll be a tough matchup. I talked to the coaches and the players after the game, and they were all saying physicality. Make sure we get the same pressure on DeWitt that we did on Mason, and we should be fine. But that'll be a tough matchup. You know how good DeWitt is.
Yeah, DeWitt is very, very good. Again, they topped Hazlitt 38-20, an 18-point win for the Panthers over the Vikings. So, yeah, Dave Merrigy, he's doing an outstanding job throughout this year, and hopefully they can keep it going or possibly keep it going against DeWitt. That's going to be a really good matchup. Rob Zimmerman, fantastic job with his squad as well. So we'll see what takes place. High school playoff football action, gotta love it, folks. Just under 10 minutes left to go here on the show. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It's time to hit you with our weekend winners. I'm looking at the entire weekend of sports. Interesting, always here each and every Monday on the show as we try to recap as much as we can here on our airwaves, right? So we'll hit you with a segment called Weekend Winners, where we take a look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
That's right. It is time for Weekend Winners here on WKR's Current Sports, where we recap the weekend that was and give our thoughts and opinions on who we thought had the best sporting weekend, okay? I got to start mine with giving a big salute to the champions of the baseball world, the 2015 World Series champs, the Kansas City Royals, winning their first World Series since 1985. I wasn't even thought of back in 1985. I was born in 1990, 5 years after the Royals won that. And it was just pretty cool seeing KC celebrate last night and just watching that game. I mean, that's the reason why I went to bed so late, because of the Royals and Mets game. And a big salute, if I want to get more specific with my winners here, I got to give a big shout-out to Christian Colon, because this is a guy who entered that game late in that game and was able to give the Royals the lead with a single to bring around town a man to break the tie in the 12th. First at-bat all postseason, and Christian Colon delivers. It's fun to watch this Kansas City Royals team. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, eight times this postseason the Royals were down and rallied back to get the dub. Impressive stuff for a team that does it the blue collar way. Hats off to the Kansas City Royals. That was a fun game last night.
Yeah, Christian Colon, he's the perfect figurehead for this Royals team winning the World Series. You talk about the Spurs of baseball, pretty much a small market with a bunch of stars, but no individual players who you're really like, see, this is why they're good. It's a team. It's a team. And
right,
we saw it when they voted for the All-Star game, how many Royals players were in first. That's the great support they've had. The fans are loyal. They deserve it. My weekend winner, I'm going to go with a couple of them. Miami, of course. What a win for them. That rivals Michigan State's. I know it's yours as well.
But no, it's not.
But no,
because
what?
Miami didn't win that game, Isaac. Let's be honest.
But they, no, they shouldn't have.
They did
they
not.
They should
right.
not have.
That but should be an L.
Technically won.
Right. And, technically, it did.
And that's the thing.
Right.
No, you're right. It should be an L. And this is a fair rant. This is ridiculous. The replay booth has all authority to review that play
right.
and call him down, which he clearly was when he made that lateral. But, boy, there's all these different divergent paths for new interim coaches. We saw Al Golden of Miami fired earlier this year.
Yep.
And Larry Scott, the interim coach. How about him getting a big win in this game against a ranked opponent? Wow. On the other side of the coin, boy, Minnesota just choking to Michigan. Michigan was always saying, boy, we should have won that Michigan State game. They won because of a fluke. Well, here's your fluke, because I'll tell you what, that play calling by Tracy Clays was some of the worst I have ever seen.
It
you run
bad.
A five-man motion with 18 seconds left in the clock
right,
running,
right.
get two plays, not one that's a field goal. That is ridiculous. And then lastly, to conclude my rant, a nice peaceful song and just meditative mood, Drew Brees. I was wrong.
Oh,
he's still a top
gosh.
Five quarterback, seven
oh,
touchdowns.
Man.
He's now yeah. only the second quarterback in NFL history to have
yeah.
two games of 500 yards or more, seven touchdowns, one interception, including a game-tying drive as
yeah.
to expire the clock. And, boy, I just – go to New Orleans. Come on. That was great.
Oh, gosh. I knew it was coming. I'm a little salty because, of course, the Lions are crap. In the Detroit, the Dallas Cowboys, excuse me, they've lost, what, five straight weeks now? It's bad. But, yeah, Drew Brees, I mean, he's only the seventh quarterback in NFL history to throw for more the eighth quarterback in NFL history, seventh or eighth, one of the two, to throw for seven touchdowns in a single game, which is unbelievable. And looking at the combined score, that was the third highest scoring game in NFL history. Absolutely no defense. And that game also messed up my ESPN streak for cash as well. But, hey, congrats to the Saints, man. That was a big dub. So, but, yeah, and to go back to the Miami game, I mean, looking at what the refs missed here, there's an entire list. Again, that officiating crew is now suspended by the ACC. The on-field officials, they failed to penalize Miami for an illegal block in the back at the Miami 16-yard line. The on-field crew failed to penalize Miami receiver Rashawn Scott for leaving the bench and running onto the field before the play had ended. The block in the back penalty that was called at the Duke 26-yard line was picked up after the officials confirmed, which is appropriate. They correctly determined that the block was from the side. There were multiple screw-ups in this game by that officiating crew. Then they took 9 minutes to deliberate to see. How do you take 9 minutes and you miss all of that?
Well, the biggest one was that one player was down when
he
lateraled
down.
It. That's
right.
a reviewable play. They
exactly.
reviewed that. That is unbelievable. That's terrible.
Right, poor exactly.
dude.
He should have ruled that. Yeah, that's Mark Walton that you're talking about. Running back Mark Walton was down before releasing the ball on one of the lateral. Oh, just, oh, God, that's bad. That's bad. All right, folks. Well, we're out of time. We will see you here tomorrow. Same time, same place. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Big shout out and thanks to Eric Doc Love of Team 92.1 FM for joining me today. Have a fantastic Monday and be easy, people.